Aloha kakahiaka.
Aloha.
Oh, I'm so honored to introduce our listeners to Dennis David Kahekili Mama'o Ikalani Keha Kamakani.
Aloha.
Did I say it right?
Almost. Well, how are you doing, Linda?
Oh, I'm so excited to hear your voice on our phone. You're one of my favorite Saki artists, and I'm just so honored that you're calling in and to talk to our listeners and share your words of wisdom and your music with us. You're coming to Ekani Kanikapila Kako next Monday. Some of the awards you've won, you're a multiple Grammy winner. You're a multiple Nahoku Hanohano Award winner. You've been inducted into the Hawaiian Music Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that was quite a surprise last year. I received a letter, and the whole induction ceremony is actually this May coming at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel. And the first thing they did was call me and say, "Are you going to be here?" Because I'm always traveling, you know. And I said, "Well, yeah." I circled the date. You can't miss it. It's May 1st, and I think they're going to hold it at the Monarch Room.
Oh, wonderful!
So that's going to be. And it's going to be unusual. Instead of a dinner, it's going to be at a brunch, so even better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's good to be here. I'll be on the road again in March, traveling on the West Coast with my son David, and together with George Kahumoku and his son Keoki. We're doing a father and son concert tour all along the West Coast.
That's wonderful. Oh, we have, you know, there's just so many people that love slack key music. And I know that you've been touring a lot lately.
Well, I think not as much as I used to because of health-wise, I'm just recuperating after 2 years ago, finding out that I was diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm like the poster boy for entertainers, you know.
Uh-huh.
And everybody I meet that has diabetes, you know, we talk.
Yeah.
And make sure we have, you know, our health in control.
Right, yeah. Right. That's so important,
Yeah.
I had some questions that I wanted to ask you. I'm interested in finding out who were your early mentors and teachers that inspired you and influenced in your early life?
Well, I think it all began with my grandfather. My grandfather was a slack key player, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Came from the island of Molokai. And in his younger days, he actually was a music clerk in Honolulu. And I was surprised. I found that out later after he had passed on. And, you know, we're doing genealogy. But he loved music, and of course my father was a member of the Royal Hawaiian Band, so he was very instrumental in me going into the serious side of music. So when he found out I was interested in music in my younger days, back when I first got into like beginning band and all that, you know,
mm-hmm.
he encouraged me to study music. So it was because of his guidance and mentoring that I went into the study of music. And so those were my early influences. Then you have people that I admired and followed because of their way of playing Hawaiian music. Because
mm-hmm.
I never thought I was going to come back to Hawaiian music, because my main focus was to go into classical music. And, and write, you know, compose,
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
I love music in that genre. But what happened was when it came time for my finals music theory and everything, my professor asked me, what was in store for me in the future. And I said, well, you know, I gave him all these plans, you know, hey, I'm going to write all these symphonies and go around the world and conduct symphonic orchestras, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he shook his head. He looked at me, he shook his head, and he said, no, you're not. He said, you should go back to the root where you come from, you know, your Hawaiian folk music. And I kind of looked at him kind of strangely, and I said, well, you know, that music is so simple, you know, there's no challenge to it. And he said, this is the thing I'll always remember. he said that the simple things in life and in music are the hardest to achieve.
Wow.
And so that changed my whole attitude. And I went back to the study of folk music, Hawaiian folk music. And then, of course, in my years, I was interested in doing music research. So then that's where Eddie Kamai came into the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And he started to mentor me in that direction. And pretty soon, you know it, he says he's going to reorganize the Sons of Hawaii. He asked me to join. And I wasn't too sure I was going to stay too long because I had my heart set on going to Alaska. That's where I wanted to live.
Really?
Yeah. I fell in love with Alaska. It was the last wilderness, you know.
Uh-huh.
And that whole Pacific Northwest area is just beautiful for me. I love that area. And well, what happened was, okay, you know, I was working for the airlines at that time, doing musical public relations. And so I'm up in Alaska. I'm getting ready to move. I come home, and then Eddie Kamai says, you know, we have a couple of concerts here. Can you play? And I said, okay. So I said, well, you know, after this is all finished, I'm going. Well, after those two concerts, I never went back. So I stayed in Hawaii.
Wow.
But you know, it's been a great, great memories thinking of all these people who have been part of my life in Hawaiian music. And of course, I always revere my teacher, Mary Kabena Pukui. You know, I mean, she was the one that opened up a whole new direction as to the Hawaiian music as far as the poetry. And,
and
she said something very, 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 very important. I think that changed my life too. And it said, you know, musicians and composers, especially composers, he says, you guys are historians. So when you write about a time, a feel of that particular moment in time. And people identify with your view of a certain subject or an emotion. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So she said that was important. And since the Hawaiian language is an oral tradition, she said, you become very important in that aspect. And I never forgot that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had the opportunity to study with her for a while. And then through her and Eddie, I got to meet some of the other scholars, you know, Pilahi Baki, and my favorite to always meet when we go to Kona, and that's Auntie Iolani Luhin. You know,
mm-hmm.
We just sit down and talk. And she was just a fascinating person to be around. And, well, those were my mentors that got me interested in Hawaiian music.
Mm-hmm. What was the first instrument that you played?
Ukulele.
Oh, really?
I started when I was 3.
Oh, my goodness. 3 years old?
Yeah. And my father gave me it was my mom's Martin ukulele. And my father and I would jam, and he taught me some basic chords, and, you know, I loved it. You know, I mean, you know, after these Royal Hawaiian Band concerts, the band members would come over to our house, you know, and then they'd all bring their string instruments and start playing all this Hawaiian music, so I'd follow along, and, you know, it was a great thing to learn that way, you know, because, you know, I've always been around music, but to actually get to play with, you know, really, really good musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to me, that was like, I look forward to every Sunday after the concerts that come over to the house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know it. You mentioned in your biography that you were born before the era of cable TV and video games.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, so your evening was filled with family and music and talking story. And
yeah, you know, because television was very expensive, you know, back in those days. And, see, I can't remember seeing I think the first TV I remember is when I was around 3.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, prior to that was radio. You know, you listen to the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was no radio program that you liked, then you went out on the front porch.
Mm-hmm.
And you started playing music. And my grandfather would start playing. And the neighbors would hear. And they'd come over, bring their guitars and ukuleles. And pretty soon, you know it, the whole neighborhood would be around. And it would rotate, you know. Each night, a different place, a different porch, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how the neighborhood was, you know. It was a close family. Everybody knew each other. I can't remember at any time during that time when I was a small keiki that we ever heard the phrase "lock your car" or "lock your house," because you know, it was not it was a different time then. Everybody cared and they knew each other. And of course, if you got into trouble, you get disciplined by the neighbor, you know. And then you come home and get disciplined by your parents. Because everybody was auntie and uncle, you know. But it was a great way of growing up. And, you know, my childhood friends from those days, you know, I still bump into them once in a while. And we all talk about their parents. And a lot of them have passed on. But the memories are really, really good.
Where would you say your style of singing came from?
I don't know. You know, I've never really thought about the vocal aspect. I just sang how I felt. But as far as the vocal training, that came through my days at high school days in Kamehameha School, when I became part of the concert glee club. But most of my time, I remember, was writing, you know, spending my time, especially during my intermediate school years. You know, I still got some drafts that I remember writing, and I want to keep them because I wanted to see how much I matured over the years.
Wow, so you were writing from such an early age and playing music from such an early age, so that you just automatically knew that was your destiny?
Well, I love music. You know, music to me was like how a sports-minded person thinks of sports all the time. I would practice on my guitar. I remember back in intermediate school, everybody else was outside playing football and everything. I'm inside the house practicing my guitar, and you know, sometimes you go like 8 hours, 16 hours, you know.
Wow.
Just trying to find how far you can go, you know, the limits of the instrument. And of course, my father helped me a lot too, because you know, he was a trombone player. So I remember going to my first beginning band session, and then we had to choose an instrument, you know, and I wanted to play the drums. And of course, when my grandmother heard that, she said, "No, you're not." But I came home and I said, "Gee, I can't decide what instrument to play." You know, so I came home with a saxophone, and my father said, "Well, you know, it's a good instrument. You know, it's called the lazy man's horn." You know, but and then when he said that, I said, "Okay, I'll go pick another instrument." So I came back home with a cornet, and he was a cornetist too. You know, he goes, "Oh, you know, it's a good instrument you got there." He said, "But you know, after a while, you know, cornet players, you know, their lips come really misshapen because the mouthpiece is so small." So I went back again, and the only instrument left was a trombone. So he wanted me to play the trombone all that time, you know. But which was good, because when I came home, we practiced together, and you know, I'd listen to a guy. I can still hear him, you know, even though he's passed on. But I can still hear him play some really sweet music. He was a good jazz player, and he loved the big band 40 sound, you know. So, whenever the band, Royal Hawaiian Band guys would come over jam, I mean, we'd have our own concert, you know, right there, you know, on the front porch, and listen to all this beautiful music. But that's how I, you know, that's how I would spend my time back in the early days.
Well, who was in your first group? What was the name of your first group, and where did you do your first gigs?
Well, let's see now. My very first group, before I went into Hawaiian music, I was in rock.
Really?
We played Top 40 Motown. And that was the kind of music I liked, and because of the rhythm. And you had to be, you know, you had to have a good bass player in those days. And, yeah, we had a really good band. You know, I thought I grew up in the Aliamanu, Salt Lake area, and some of the good rock bands back then in Hawaii came from Radford High School, and that's the high school I was gonna go to before I got admitted to Kamehameha. So a lot of my friends from this area went to Radford, and so right after eighth grade, you know, we all split up, and we all went into different types of music. But I still see some of my old band members, and they're still playing rock. You know? And so then we all sit down, talk story about the, you know, the days. And sometimes we think about, like, what would have happened if things were different, you know. Would I still be in rock music then? I think probably. You know, that was that was what I was looking at. But then, you know, when I went to Kamehameha School, we concentrated on the Hawaiian culture. And I got to know and learn more about my culture, the Hawaiian culture. And so my views changed after that. You know, you become more aware of your roots. So those that was a big change, I think, in the direction that I was looking at that time.
Is that when you discovered Queen Liliʻuokalani's music?
I think the Queen's music really came into focus after during high school. You know, it was it's beautiful music, and we only touched on the surface. You know, it wasn't until I graduated from high school, I was in college, and then meeting Eddie, and you know, we go through the manuscripts and all listen to all the songs that weren't recorded. You know, just she was so prolific in that area, you know, of how she can write so poetic, and yet her musicianship was really high caliber due to her her teacher Henry Berger. So, you know, as another composer, I'm looking at her work and I'm saying, wow, this is fantastic. I mean, it's like say a Mozart looking at a Beethoven coming up, you know. Well, you know, but you know, when I looked at her music is still what I go back to all the time, and I find new things every time I go into her manuscripts and find out more about why she wrote different songs. You know, so it's been a lifelong study of her, and I enjoy her works, and try to fashion my poetic sense after how she wrote.
Do you have a favorite song that you wrote?
You know, everybody asks me that.
Of course.
I like them all. I mean, they're just like children, you know.
Right.
You know,
right.
Each one takes on a different characteristic. It's written for different things, I think, because my songs are more personal because they're actual experiences. Yeah. So, you know, you can see how I'm moving through my life, you know, that at certain times the mood is different. Things that interest me at a different part of my musical career, you know. And it's been a fabulous journey because I've matured, you know, as far as I look at my work from when I first began, and then now I'm into the historic kind of things, yeah. And doing a lot of research on the mainland, especially my interest now of the Native Hawaiians going over to the mainland and intermingling with the Native Americans. To me, that's a fascinating story. It's a part of history that I'm just discovering now in the last 10 years. So we've been in constant contact with many Native American tribes along the West Coast, and we find fascinating stories of how the Hawaiians became part of their history and part of their tribe. You know? And so we're going up and down the Pacific Northwest now. I'm like a little boy in a candy store, you know, because I love history too.
Yes.
You know? And it's just a whole new revelation and probably a direction, and hopefully a book will come out of it. Maybe not by me, but by some other researcher. Because this is an area that needs to be really, really brought back to the students here in Hawaii.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
So that's where my focus is now. So we've been in contact. And then, of course, I have my new granddaughter.
Yes.
That's another focus.
Yes.
But yeah. More so because she has she's part Cherokee too. So, you know, it just brings it more into the historic fact, the in the mode of music and research I'm in now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What songs are you? Have you decided what songs you're bringing to Ekane Kapila Kako?
Well, this is one I'm teaching, but as far as the list I'm going to, you know, present, because we have one song we teach, and then we go into this other thing. And we never make a list because we don't know what we're going to do.
Yeah. You know? Makes it more fun, huh?
Well, because of the different stories.
Right.
You know.
Right.
There may be some new songs I've just written about my new voyage to Washington, you know, Seattle,
yes.
That area.
Mm-hmm.
This past November, I was up in Seattle and we did a concert, the first Seattle Slack Key concert in that area. And a lot
that
of
was
my,
with Cyril?
Yeah, with Cyril Pahinui and a whole stage load of talented Slack Key, Makana, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I was happy to see some of my friends from the Nisqually Reservation. They came over and we were talking stories. And this is where I'm focusing now because the Nisqually tribe is very interesting because there was a Hawaiian that left Hawaii in 1830 and married into the tribe. And then his descendant became a chief of the Nisqually tribe. And if you go to Washington, if you go down south near the Oregon border, right above the Columbia River, you'll see a town called Kalama. And this is his name was John Kalama. He left Hawaii very, very young. But it's an interesting story. And I was happy to be part of the first celebration of the founding of the town, 175th anniversary.
Mm.
And we did a, and now it's an annual thing. So hopefully, maybe this year I might drop by just to say hello again.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a great celebration there now, and you know, we encourage everybody that is in that area or are going to go up to Washington, go stop by Kalama. It's a quaint little town, maybe 1,800 people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I was a stranger. I went Malihini over there, and the town was so small, but I still got lost. I had to go to the police department and then ask for directions to the high school.
Uh-huh.
That's where we had the concert.
Uh-huh.
But they have a celebration every, I think it's August. So this will be the fifth year coming up. And some people have asked me already from down in Oregon and some of the tribal members. And I said, well, you know, it's time for me to take a vacation of this. So maybe I'll go up and... if I can find maybe a concert in Eugene, Oregon, or Portland, and
mm-hmm.
then go right across the river and spend some time up in Kalama before this summer. This I think would be a good getaway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to young people that are studying Slack Key?
Well, my advice is you need to come to one of the camps. Or some of the classes that sometimes we do have when
mm-hmm.
we go up on the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the camps, are the, to mm-hmm. me, have opened the door to beginning Slack Key players, intermediate Slack Key players, and even advanced players. You know? And there's several here in Hawaii. I know Keola Beamer had one,
mm-hmm.
Has one, and...
Mm-hmm.
George Kahumoku.
Yeah, yeah.
And also Kyoki.
I
just finished Kyoki's camp in December.
Uh-huh.
It runs, I think, November, December, the last week of November into December. And I was just stoked because a lot of these young kids that I saw about 3 years ago, and they've advanced so much because I didn't see them last year. But
mm-hmm.
and now this year, it just opened my eyes. I mean, they had blossomed into great, great players, and not only Slack Key, but also ukulele, and their mindset. You know, at that age, sometimes you're not really thinking about music seriously. Boy, it's a whole different thing. I mean, you know, when they come into our classes and we're teaching, once that 1 hour class is finished, you see them going off in all directions around that camp area, and they just practice.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when it's time to share what they have, when you know, they're ready to get up there and really perform.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been great to see them grow up. So I think these world. Yes. You know, yeah. It's probably the best way.
Right.
Or on a one-to-one teaching class, like my good friend Ozzy Kutani. I think he's probably one of the great beginning Slacky teachers I've seen. Because
mm-hmm.
his students learn basics so strong. So I usually teach the intermediate and advanced level. So when I get them, I can tell who studied from who.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it's usually like, you know, the guys who come from like Keola and Ozzy and, mm-hmm. And other teachers, like even Cyril's students.
Mm-hmm.
When they come into my class, man, they are way, way, way above average.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's great to see that, but you have to start from the beginning.
Right.
You know, a lot of sometimes kids get impatient. You know, and
mm-hmm.
they say, "Wow, you know, I want to play like Uncle Led and
mm-hmm.
or you know, somebody else." And I said, "Well, first you got to learn the basics. You know, you got to crawl before you walk."
Right.
And yeah, sometimes you have students once they get into the class, then they find it's hard. Because their expectations were a little bit higher than what they can do, but then you know we work with them, and you know they finally catch up in the advance. But you have to start from that basic. I don't think any student I've ever seen, except one person I can think of, and that's probably Danny Carvalho. He's a vocal student of mine now, but he studied on the Ozzy, and he's just. You know, I have no word that can describe this guy. I mean, he can play a song once and he just knows it, you know. I mean, just, and then he'll come back and find something else to add on to it, you know, to make it his own. This is a really great, you know, I call him a prodigy. He doesn't know, you know, he doesn't know that, but as a teacher, I can see him go, yeah, this is a prodigy.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, yeah, that's what I would suggest if you're going to learn Slacky.
Mm-hmm. Are you still apprenticing people?
Not as often,
because
I know I don't have the time most of the time,
mm-hmm.
and then I think my health wise, you know, it goes. It depends on day to day.
Right. Well, you want to be around to. To spend many years with your granddaughter or see her get married. And
well, I'm not thinking way far that ahead. I'm going to leave that to my son.
Yeah. So, you know, David surprised you when he showed up on the stage when you didn't realize he was playing ukulele. Is that right?
Well, he was hiding.
He was hiding.
Yeah, you know. My wife had an ukulele, so he was interested in it. So he took it to school.
Uh-huh.
And he was going to come in at school at the time, and all that time I didn't know he was practicing after school with the sons of Jerome and John Coco,
mm-hmm.
you know. So they, of course, they learn from their dads and they're teaching David, right? I mean, and that, to me, that's the best way of learning,
mm-hmm.
because when you learn from your peers.
Right.
There's no pressure,
mm-hmm.
you see. If you learn from a teacher, you got a lot of pressure.
Right.
So, you know, that's another way of learning. Because, you know, when we do our class structure, we show, then we say, okay, now break into groups and do whatever, you know,
mm-hmm.
what can you find? And then that's the best way, because they go out and they find it among themselves, and then they come back and they show you. And to me, that's no pressure. Because
mm-hmm.
they're playing with their peers, and their peers are sharing. It's a fast way of learning, you know. Well, that's what he was doing at school. And then one, we had one of his birthdays, and my wife said, you know, you should call him up on stage. And I kind of looked at my wife in a blank
mm-hmm.
you know, look. I said, you mean he plays? Because he says, oh, well, you know, he's learning. I said, oh, okay, so, you know. I'm backstage and I'm teaching him chords and all this stuff, you know. And he goes, okay, Dad, I think I got it. Okay, and we got on a stage and started playing a song. And, you know, when the song is really going and, you know, professional musicians, you know, once they get into a zone, you know, the music is moving real well. And unconsciously, I just turned to him and said, go ahead and take it, which means take the solo, you know. And so he said, what? says, go ahead, take it, you know. And then all of a sudden, he started ripping on that ukulele. And I was in shock. I stopped in the middle of the song, put my guitar down, and people were laughing. And I got up on the mic, and I said, this guy can play. And the whole audience there, the Slacky concert, was just in stitches. You know? And I said, where did you learn all that stuff? He didn't tell me he could play, you know. And he said something very interesting, and I think this is true for any child of a musician or a well-known composer or whatever. Mm-hmm. He said, I was afraid because I have to live up to your expectations. Mm-hmm. You know, other mm-hmm. people put pressure, right,
right.
On children. And I said, that taught me a valuable lesson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I remember my dad always telling me, play every kind of music that you like. Don't limit yourself to one area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, play how you feel at the moment, whatever the mood is, whether it's jazz or rock or whatever. And so that rang a bell in me, and I said, oh, okay. So I offered him, and that was his 15th birthday, I remember, and I offered him this, and I told him, since the summer is coming, would you like to tour with me across the mainland? You know, and, you know, my wife said, go, you know, and I said, yeah, okay. So I took him on his first tour, and we played all these performing arts centers.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, it's going to be hard. It's going to be like learning on the road because, you know, it's not a very romantic lifestyle. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got to wake up early, catch a plane, and by the time you get to the next place, you're really dead tired, but you got to do the show. So if you can, I said, you can survive the 2.5-3 weeks that we're on the road, then you are a real musician. And he says, okay. So he tried it, and he did it. And he ended up in the recording studio, and one of my good friends, Howard Johnson, from Different Fur Studio, where we recorded all our Dancing Cat stuff, he taught him how to record. We went in there and how to present a song, you know, all the psychological aspects that, you know, if you go to record, you have to learn that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because of the audience that's out there. And he took everything in, and bingo, he was on the next album, the Ohana album.
Mm-hmm.
That came out, right?
I love that album.
Yeah, you know? And that was his first professional album.
Mm-hmm.
And he was 16 at the time. So,
wow.
Yeah, and ever since he's grown. And,
he has two solo albums now. He has Pa'ani and then Shine.
Yeah, Shine. Shine, he asked me, you know, that was his first produced album all by himself.
Wow.
And so he was nervous because I was on one cut, and I said, oh, you know, this is easy. But he said, I remember he told his mother, my wife, he says, I think I'm a little nervous because I'm going to ask Dad to come in the studio to listen to all the tracks. You know? And I told him when I sat down, I said, you know, whatever I hear, if I hear something that's not up to the standard, I'm going to tell you, because that's only to help you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I listened to the whole thing, and there was a little few rough spots here and there, and on the Hawaiian, you know, the Hawaiian songs. And I said, you know, you should got to fix this up and all that. And then I listened to the last piece of the album. And they were all, even the recording engineer, everybody's waiting, you know, it's like that commercial that, you know, you walk into a room and everybody's quiet. Well, okay, so they're waiting for my opinion. And I stood up and I said, this is a fun album. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the different style. And I said, I'm glad that's you. That's what you really
yes,
are.
Right.
You know, that's what you are.
Right.
And that album expresses how you feel. And I said, if you can make all your albums like that, you're going to be very successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially when you have full control, you have the creativity to
mm-hmm.
do that, you know.
Right.
So right now I'm trying to get him to write more personal material.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll probably come off when we go on this tour in March.
Right.
So hopefully he'll write and start composing some new things.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just so, so happy for him, and so happy for you and for Robin and your family. And And life is good, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It gets better every year. I think now it's, to me, I can look forward to, I just made 43 years in the business. And then, so me and Ledward, we started at the same time. So when we both got inducted into the Hawaiian Music Hall of Fame, and we were sitting down on the right after the ceremony and everything. So we turned to each other and I said, well, it's, that's 7 years and we make 50, right? So let's plan on our 50.
Yeah.
And so he said, yeah, that's a good idea, So I don't know. There's going to be some kind of big celebration in 7 years.
Wow.
Hopefully we can do something together. You know, we had to play on the road together because our schedules are all different. But
right.
When I did a tour with him in a couple of years back, it was a lot of fun. I've never had so much fun on a stage, especially not knowing what we're going to do. Spontaneous. Just feeling the audience and say, oh, I got a song. Okay, mm-hmm. And we just go right on.
Just jamming.
Yeah.
Just jamming. Huh?
And just bringing that audience right into the performance.
Uh-huh.
And he's a great person to play music with. One of the most talented musicians and guitarists I've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
He can play every kind of music.
Yeah.
And the sounds he can get out of that guitar,
uh-huh.
I don't think anybody else I've heard in my lifetime. So it's just a joy, just sitting down and playing with him.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do play and jam together, it's those moments we relive,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that 7 years from now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Dennis, we're looking forward to you coming to Kanakapila Kako next Monday night with your son David and Eddie Kamai.
Right, yeah. Uncle
yes.
Eddie will be there, and
yes.
He has some songs to share. I don't know his list either, but it plans to be a really memorable evening because he doesn't go to many things too often,
mm-hmm.
and I'm glad that we get to play and jam every once in a while. So it'll be like a small little old sons of Hawaii reunion, not with a son of a son.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited. I know all our listeners are excited, and we're really looking forward to your visit. And we'll see you next Monday night. Thank you again for taking the time to call in and speak to our listeners. And thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure, and aloha to everyone there in Kauai.
And listening all over the world. We're worldwide.
Oh, yeah. All over the world.
All over the world.
Yeah.
Your blessings of aloha, mahalo again, and take care.
Take care.
We'll see you next Monday.
Aye.
Aloha.
Aloha.